south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
So I've been getting some emails from people saying they can't get to my website. It's not connecting. Well, as mentioned last show, my new and permanent website for now and ever after is expatplanb.com. That's expatplanb.com. By the way, you know I never send out mailings to people asking them to buy this or that product. I don't sell or push products. I don't need to do that. So if you ever get an email from any site at all that resembles the Expat Files, it's not coming from me. It's coming from some scammer that's trying to sell you something using my name or my reputation. Hey, that's what this internet world has come to. You latch on to a good thing and people like it. Then after a while, people figure ways to copy and steal from you and or try to ride your coattails. And that's one of the big reasons why I'm not using the expatfiles.com anymore or the newexpat.com, because they've been compromised and infiltrated. So if you get any kind of mailings at all that aren't coming from my new site, expatplanb.com, they're not coming from me. They're not legit. They're coming from copycat scammers. You know, it's a fact that almost everyone who's got a presence on the internet gets scammed in some way or another. I'll give you an example of how it's happened to me. Turns out there was a guy I knew, but not that well at all, who, as it turns out, was doing a lot of traveling around the world, who somehow just kept getting free hotel rooms and free meals at restaurants. So how'd he get all these freebies? Well, he hooked on to a good scam. He would check into a hotel and say he was part of the Expat Files, part of Johnny Mueller's crew. And how he'd get freebies is he'd say, look, if you give me a free hotel room during my stay or free meals in the restaurants, whatever, I'll make sure that Johnny Mueller gives you a plug on his show or in some of his reports and writings. Of course, what he promised him never happened. Now, the fact is, I don't know how long that had been going on, probably a couple of years, until finally one of those hotels sent me an email asking about this guy. Well, of course, at that point, his scamming days were over, though he's probably onto a new one by now. Funny thing, you know, karma, whether you believe it or not, happened to bite him right in the ass. Now, I didn't know him very well, but once he said to me, before I found out about any of this, he said, Johnny, I've got about $5,000. Have you got any ideas on how I might invest that? And I told him about this thing called Bitcoin. At the time, it was around $100 a coin, which means at that time he could have bought 50 of them. And today, that $5,000 investment would be worth close to $500,000. But he and so many others I told about Bitcoin back then said they'd do it. Over and over again they said it, but never got around to pulling the trigger. Perfect example of human nature, huh? And why probably 95% of Americans, when they finally hit retirement age, don't have enough money to live in the way they're accustomed to. Oh, by the way, way back when Bitcoin was around $100 or so, almost everyone I spoke to got the message, but they didn't do anything about it. So I just quit talking about it, except to my nerd friends. And you know me, I don't plug anything on this show unless I personally use it or I absolutely feel a need to give you guys a heads up. Like, for example, the Sawyer water filter that I use. Then there's the RFID blocking hidden passport pouch and the little computer I carry with me everywhere I go. My portable indestructible coffee grinder and coffee maker. And that cool little meter that detects dirty electricity around the house. Now, I give you the heads up on that stuff because I use it myself, and I don't make a dime when I refer those products to you. I'll give you the links, and I'll tell you where to get them, but I don't ask you to click through my website so I get points or a percentage. I don't do that. I send you right to their site or Amazon, whatever. Yep, that's right, Amazon. Even though I hate Amazon and what they stand for, I still use them. Nearly every expat gringo does. And you know, I dislike Bill Gates immensely too, but I still end up using Windows. Why? It's pre-installed these days on every non-Apple computer. Oh, and I don't much like Apple products either. Sure, some of them are pretty good. And of course, they're cool looking, and that's really the selling point, right? But to me and almost all the engineers I know, Apple is kind of a cult for show-offs, and their technology really isn't any better than their competitors. And the worst thing is, you're stuck going to the Apple store for everything. Sometimes it seems they have half the population brainwashed. They're in second place behind Big Brother. But I digress. Where were we? Oh, yeah. I'm no longer affiliated with or using the websites theexpatfiles.com or thenewexpat.com, both of which have been hacked and messed with. So again, if you get any kind of unsolicited mailings that seem to be coming from me or any of those sites, they're not coming from me because my only official website is expatplanb.com. And of course, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to my usual suspect email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Yeah, I know. I thoroughly dislike Google, too. But I'm kind of stuck, like you are in probably half the world's population. So yes, I do have a Gmail account, but it's for non-essential, non-critical stuff. But I also have a couple of encrypted email services, too. But they cost anywhere from $30 to $50 a year. And because they're paid services, they don't collect data on you or sell it off, like Gmail, Yahoo, Hotmail, and all the other free services, too. Another thing I really like about those paid email services is that you do not get any pop-up windows because they're not selling off your data. Just remember, nothing's for nothing, talk is cheap, and you get what you pay for, just like this show. All right, then, let's move on. Remember on the previous show I mentioned that I had a big backlog of emails and questions, etc. So let's finish off some of the more interesting ones. This is from Juan, not Obi-Wan, just Juan. He says, I heard a recent podcast of yours, late December, I think, and you talked a little about climate change or the new political slogan for climate change, global warming, and never heard you mention anything about the grand solar minimum or the grand solar maximum. Fact is, we are in the grand solar minimum end of the 10-year cycle right now, and in 10 years from now, we'll be at the end of the 400-year grand solar minimum end of cycle. So if people think the weather is weird now, wait till 2028 through 2030. Then he says, did you know, Johnny, that the Chinese have measurements of these solar minimums and maximums going back thousands of years? And in the U.S., we only have records going back maybe 250 years. It all revolves around the sunspot activity and solar radiation. I encourage you to look it up and report to your listeners, as I have not found one person yet who knows anything about it, except the person that told me. It works like this. There's virtually no sunspot activity right now, which is why there's so much volcanic activity. You can look it up. Volcanic activity on the Earth tracks minimal sunspot activity, also severe droughts in some areas and flooding in others, and extremes in cold and hot temperatures, too, like the record low temperatures set in Utah a few months ago, minus 45 degrees Fahrenheit, coldest temperature ever recorded in the U.S. Of course, it was all over the news, right? I doubt it. Then Juan says, the jet streams have also changed as a result of this, too, among many other things that affect and modulate the weather. Oh, and about that famous bean deal our infamous leader made with China. There, in China, that is, corn crops were decimated, and they lost millions of pigs to some new flu virus or whatever. So China's needed to buy crops from us to feed their people. They don't have a choice. However, I'm not sure how we're going to supply it all to them, since we're having a hard time growing anything here with our own climate change issues. We'll see, but one thing's for sure. Growing your own food will turn out to be a very good custom in the coming years. Adios for now, Johnny. Signed, $1. You know, $1 doesn't get you much these days. By the way, Juan, the female version of your name is Juanita or Juana. So you could have signed it, if you're a female, $1. Why not 10 or 100 or a million? Well, you know, $1 million ain't what it used to be, huh? Anyway, just one. I absolutely do know about the grand solar minimum and grand solar maximum, because they're closely related and have a lot to do with those dangerous solar mass ejections that can wipe out the electrical grid of an entire country, even an entire continent. Yep, I've researched those things in the U.S. back to the 1800s, and all the way back to what they call the Little Ice Age, which happened all over the Earth from 1645 to 1715. And that all happened during a grand solar minimum, too. In fact, it was such a long solar minimum, they gave it a special name, the Maunder Minimum. It lasted well beyond the normal 11-year sunspot cycle. And how do we know that? Well, back then, people did have telescopes, and they looked up into the sky a lot, probably because they didn't have smartphones. And back then, scientists were very good at cataloging sunspot activities. Of course, you can't look at the sun, especially not through a telescope, but you can project it on a screen. By the way, and I touched on this a bit, grand solar minimums and maximums run on an 11-year cycle, not 10. It's all very complicated, and even mathematicians cannot write this stuff out in an equation. There's way too many things that affect the climate, way too many data points. But one thing is true, solar minimums and maximums have a huge effect on climate. In fact, if you look it up, you'll see the little ice age that occurred between 1645 and 1715 produced so much cold around the world that for the first time in history, the Thames River in London froze solid. And it froze for so long, they would hold ice and frost fairs right on the river. And that's never been done before or since. Which brings us back to the topic of growing your own. Man, talk about digressing. Now, in my mind, the best place to be, if you're considering or worrying a lot about climate change, is in an altiplano region. And here's something really important that almost no one talks about except me. I know I mentioned this just once before in a previous show, but you never hear or read about it in the lamestream or the alternative news. And that is the fact that for every 1,000 feet you go up in elevation, the temperature drops about 4 to 5 degrees Fahrenheit. And if it's cloudy or raining, the temperature drops about 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit for every 1,000 feet. So what's that mean and why is it so important? Because when you look up the facts, you'll hear climatologists saying the average temperature on the Earth has risen something like 1.5 degrees Fahrenheit in the last 100 years. And they're expecting, with all this climate craziness, for it to raise another 1.5 degrees in the next 50 years, for a grand total of 3 degrees increase since the days of the Industrial Revolution. And that, according to so many talking heads in the news, will make for grave consequences, especially with growing seasons, rainfall, and crop yields. So then what's that got to do with gringos and expats and their plan B? Well, it's like this. If you choose to live in the Altiplano, which is anywhere from 3 to 6 or even 7,000 feet above sea level, and you know there are a number of Latin American countries with Altiplano regions, not just Guatemala either, though Guatemala's got a very extensive altiplano. In fact, it's got more percentage of altiplano for its area than any other Latin country. But, you know, Colombia, Venezuela, Ecuador, and Mexico have their own particular altiplanos too. But they don't have extensive regions that go on for hundreds of kilometers. They're generally spotty and spread out. Anyway, you don't have to be a genius to realize if you live in the altiplano, let's say at 4,000 feet. Your temperature is going to be around 15 degrees cooler than sea level. And that's a big difference. In other words, if it's 90 at the coast, which is uncomfortable, it's 75 at 4,000 feet. That's why when I hear people freaking out about so-called climate change and what it's going to do or what they think it's going to do to their lives. Obviously, they don't know about the altiplano, nor have they read too many science books. Probably none. But then again, what can you expect from a population that doesn't read, least of all, science books or science articles? When's the last time you read one? However, if you got a so-called STEM degree, science, engineering, technology, and math, then you obviously like science and just might have read a book or two without it being assigned by a teacher. By the way, I'm just looking at a table right now that says in the U.S. from the year 2015 to 2018, the percentage share of bachelor's and above science, technology, engineering, and math degrees, STEM degrees, is around 20% of the people graduating. The other 80% being liberal arts, humanities, and business degrees, most of whom you can assume have never read a science book. In fact, and it's a sad fact, most people who graduate from university never pick up a book again, and some are happy to admit that. It's no wonder the vast majority of people swallow everything they see in the lamestream media. And it's not so much they don't know how to differentiate between real and fake news, it's that they don't really care to do any further investigation. It's priorities, I get it. It interferes with that quality fake book and Instagram time. Though, if you're really worried and freaking out about climate change, goose up your plan B, get it in turbo drive, and move to the Altiplano. You know, I've lived in the Altiplano off and on for more than 25 years. And I have to admit, unless you're stuck in a car with the windows rolled up and there's no air conditioning, you almost never break a sweat. Though, you really have to watch out for the sun because, you know, if you're 3 to 5,000 feet above sea level and the sun is more directly overhead because you're nearer the equator and the atmosphere is thinner, the sun is actually stronger than at sea level. The rays, including ultraviolet, are very penetrating. You could get a sunburn in 10 minutes. You'll get fooled when you first visit the Altiplano. You'll feel the sun on your skin, all right. It'll be hot. But the air around you will feel very comfortable, maybe 70 to 75 degrees. So you learn to be cautious. But don't be fooled like so many gringos and expats have been. The fact is, many times you'll be out and about doing errands in absolute comfort, going from place to place, only to find later in the day when you get home that your lily white arms, face, and neck have been pretty well sunburned. Then, when you think back on the day as to how you got it, well, you just can't put your finger on it. That's what the weather's like in the Altiplano. All right, let's move on. Here's an email from Mr. Ed. A horse is a horse, of course, of course. Am I showing my age or that I watch Nick at night? Nah, it must be old age. I don't watch TV. Mr. Ed says, Johnny, I'm trying to do a lazy man's paint project with the concrete cabinets in the kitchen area of my studio apartment. Yep, I'm in the Antigua Guatemala Altiplano. My landlord did a cut-rate project with the same paint that he told me was waterproof, but it was so weak that when I rub over it with a paper towel soaked in anything, even a bit of saliva, it'll come off. I'm trying to use some spray paint to coat over the old junk, but so far it's no better. I'm using some peroxide and white vinegar mixed together in a 50-50 solution in a spray bottle as a wonder cleaner too for my crock pot and other things. It seems like this even cuts through the spray paint. However, when I overcoat it with some clear paint, it seems to be basically waterproof, but who knows? So, Johnny, I'm asking with your construction experience, I'm wondering if you know of any spray-on silicone solution or something which would work as a waterproof overcoat so that I could finally get stable paint on the concrete cabinets without it coming off seemingly on its own. I'm to the point now where I don't even care if it's natural slash organic, which was always my preference, so long as it doesn't rub off when I go over it with a wet sponge or a damp paper towel or try to spit shine it. Me, Johnny here, isn't it funny? Everyone else's saliva is gross, except our own. Man, are humans weird or what? Anyway, Mr. Ed concludes by saying, Johnny, maybe something they sell at the hardware stores around here or even a boat supply store might do. If you have any suggestions, I'll need the name in Spanish, possibly the brand name, too. Muchos Thancos, signed, Mr. Ed. And there's a little hoof print attached. Nice touch there, Mr. Ed. All right, Mr. Ed and everyone else out there, I have a couple of suggestions for you. They use a lot of concrete and concrete block down here. I mean, tons of it. And you'll find almost everyone uses the cheapest brand of paint around. Yep, it seems every Latin American country has one or more of its own paint manufacturers with funky brand names like Volcan, Corona, or Tinta. Yep, Corona, like the beer, they make paint too. But I'm warning you, stay away from all the non-name brands like Corona, because they're really third rate. And technically speaking, suck. That's not to say they won't look good after they're first applied, but believe me, they don't stick or last like more expensive brand names, Sherwin-Williams, Pittsburgh Paints, Thomas More, even Sears. But the thing is, you'll find the local generic brands are half the price or even less than Sherwin-Williams. And it always kills me when I see someone start a paint job. First thing they'll do is they'll get a 5-gallon bucket, pour a gallon of paint in there, whatever brand, and then proceed to pour a gallon of water in with it. Painters always dilute their paint down here, even though it says right on the bucket, at least with the brand name paints, do not dilute. But this is Latin America, and you know, when you dilute paint, you can get it to stretch a lot farther. Unfortunately, they do it with concrete, too. And down here, since people make significantly less money, it's all about the coin. Which is why, you move into a standard house built by standard builders here in Latin America, things start deteriorating quite rapidly. Especially roofs and walls that are exposed to the weather and the sun. Now, the trick is, if you're going to paint over a concrete or block surface that's already been painted, if the surface underneath it is peeling or bubbling, you'll have to strip that paint all the way down to bare concrete or block, or the same thing's going to happen no matter what paint you use. Even the real expensive stuff that claims to be waterproof. There's a big mistake that everybody seems to make down here, including gringos and expats. They go out and buy some fairly expensive waterproofing paint or a clear waterproofing liquid, there's a lot of that going around, and they apply it right on top of a painted surface that was bubbling or peeling before. Even though they remove most of the paint and the bubbles that were falling off, wherever you didn't get it down to bare concrete or black is going to be a spot where bubbling and flaking will occur down the line. The problem is there's a moisture source on the other side of the wall, and if you don't go after that, you're never going to solve the problem. And get this, if you read the labels on those waterproofing products, they'll always recommend that you apply to a fresh, dry, clean surface, preferably bare concrete or block. And even then, a very good waterproofing paint or product will only last a couple of years. And note that the oil, polymer-based, or two-part epoxy or polyurethane systems will last two or three times longer than waterproofing that is water-based. Like that brand I mentioned in a previous show, Lanco, L-A-N-C-O. They've got a pretty good product, and it's not that cheap. But it definitely does not last through the 10-year guarantee they promise on the bucket. I've had the stuff start peeling and chipping within two or three years. But I'm a guy who saves receipts, and that's something Latinos rarely do. So I went back to the hardware store well-prepared, saying, hey, it's peeling and it's coming up on 3 years and it's guaranteed for 10. What are you going to do about it? And I showed them the photos on my phone. Well, surprise, surprise, I had the receipt, so they gave me a replacement bucket. But, you know, a lot of good that will do, because now I got to scrape it all down to concrete or block again. Of course, I won't do it. I'll have my maintenance guy do it. But it's really not going to solve the problem. It's going to come right back. And it's a thankless job to have a guy scrape all that down to the concrete, only to reapply stuff that's guaranteed for 10 years and will only last 3. But that's life here in Latin America. Then again, you could buy the much more expensive oil-based and two-part epoxy-style polyurethane stuff. A really good brand to get is Sika, S-I-K-A. It comes in a yellow can. All their products are yellow. In fact, some of the Sika adhesives and sealants are more than great. Because they're made in Mexico, right? Wrong, because they're made in Switzerland. And Sika products could quite possibly stand up for 10 years, if you apply them to bare concrete or block. But those mixtures will stink to high heaven when you apply them. So you better have a mask with a carbon filter if you're inside. And the fumes could continue to bother you for a month or so. Now, the real basis for this whole moisture problem here in Latin America is that Latinos skip the waterproofing of exterior walls and floors completely or do a half-assed job of it with cheap, inferior products. I've come to the conclusion myself that they'll just never learn. That's why it's buyer beware when you buy an existing structure. Though you could get lucky and have a structure that's got no seepage or moisture problems at all. It's rare, but when you do see it, it's generally due to having a lucky break with the contours of the land. But you can't really count on that. Your best bet being, if you're interested in purchasing an existing property, is to inspect it during the rainy season. Because often what looks good during the dry season will be an ugly surprise in the pouring rain. And speaking of drainage, you'll find that most Latinos, even good contractors and builders, don't quite know how to slope or contour the land around a building for runoff. And often you'll find a moisture or leakage problem can be corrected easily by just doing some excavation and dirt moving outside. However, once I got caught in a jam myself early on. It was the third foreign country I'd lived in, and the fourth house that I bought was a brand new single-family freestanding house with a nice lot in the Altiplano. And I bought it in the dry season. Next thing you know, the rain comes. I guess they were trying to be first world cute, so they put in a sunken living room. It sure looked nice. Well, within about a year and a half, the whole perimeter of that room, measuring about a foot and a half from the floor on up, the paint started bubbling and flaking. And then came the mold. So where was the moisture coming in? Below ground, of course. And I figured maybe it would be easy. I just recontour the land, lower the ground profile on the outside. And when I checked around the building, I found I could only partially do it because part of the outside wall of the living room was only about 2 feet away from an 8-foot concrete fence. So there was no way to contour the land in that tight space. Thus, I found I'd have that problem forever. Though I did come up with a partial solution. It wasn't functionally or structurally great, but it was aesthetically pleasing. I called up a glass company and had them put floor-to-ceiling mirrors on all the walls in the living room. Now, that makes a room look really big and open, so that helped the room spatially, and at the same time, covered up the space near the floor where the walls were bubbling and peeling. In other words, all that slowly deteriorating nastiness was now behind a set of full-length mirrors, so I kind of cheated my way out of that mess. Then, after staying there a couple of years, then selling it and moving. You know, the thing that really drives me nuts is that Latin Americans have had 500 years to figure out how to handle moisture problems. And they still haven't got it right. It takes a gringo. Why is that, do you think? The fact is, I don't think I've ever been in a Latino house or office building that's not brand new, of course, that doesn't have some kind of obvious moisture, mold, or leakage problem somewhere. I kind of think they just threw in the towel generations ago and live with it. But us gringos and expats with slightly higher standards, little things like that just drive us nuts. The evidence, Exhibit A, Mr. Ed's email. Obviously, he's an expat gringo whose moisture problems are driving him nuts, too. All right, enough said about that. Now for some news and 3 million reasons why you don't want to get on a Latin American national health care plan. Even if outfits like AARP and International Living keep telling you what a great deal it is. Well, the fact is national health care systems generally suck, but they can be good when a bunch of money's pumped in, and then a couple of years later, or even a year later, they get medieval on you again. For example, this article that just came out today. Title, National Healthcare Hospitals in Ecuador are being investigated for a $3 million loss of medical supplies. It starts out by saying the director of Cuenca, Ecuador's Social Security Hospital says that more than $3 million of medical supplies, mostly medicine, has been lost due to theft and poor inventory management control. On top of that, he says, where medication has been stored, due to lack of oversight, much of it has expired and must now be discarded. Then he states that because of the poor inventory system they have, the hospital orders new medicine without knowing the same medicine is already in stock at another location. Makes you wonder if they've heard of computers yet. In addition to inventory problems, he said, the hospital is a victim of large-scale theft. In one case, he said, thousands of dollars of medicine were found hidden in the ceiling of a storeroom, ready to be spirited out. Then he says, several employees have been terminated as a result of our investigation. All right, me, Johnny here. The fact is, most national health care hospitals in Latin America are absolutely medieval. In fact, I've been in more than a few of them, and I've taken pictures of the bulletin boards in some of the doctors' lounges and hangout areas. And my favorite posted announcement on those bulletin boards? Attention, all doctors. Please bring your own gloves and disposables, because we're fresh out. Which means, of course, their stock has been stolen. So, do you still want to go down to Costa Rica, Colombia, or Ecuador and get on their national healthcare system? You hear rags like International Living suggesting that to prospective expats all the time. Why? Because if you're a resident, it's virtually free. That, as opposed to private healthcare insurance, which is absolutely first world quality. But it costs a hefty $100 or so a month. Oh, what a tragedy. South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.